There is a lot of misinformation going on about what's banned, what you can and can't legally fly. The nutshell is that future drones that do not have FCC approval, these are drones that are not built yet. These drones are banned from coming into the US if they are made outside of the US. So that does mean that existing drones that have already been approved can continue to be sold. They can continue to restock these models that have been approved.
Welcome to Hangar X Studios, where former fighter pilot and host John Ramstad takes us on a journey across aerospace as it enters an historic period of innovation and transformation. Our guests include aviation experts, pilots, financiers, military leaders, and innovators of all types. Buckle up for another episode of Hangar X.
All right, hey, welcome to the Hangar X podcast, and this is the place where innovators and operators and CEOs and investors come to get the information first for those big decisions that we all need to make. And today we are sponsored by Hangar X Daily. Hangar X Daily takes the hundreds, if not thousands, of articles published every day and distills it down to the top 7 to 10 articles that you need to read and why. So you're going to get the information you need in just 5 minutes a day with context. So you can go to hangarxdaily.com and sign up. It's a free newsletter. And today we are going to be talking all things drones with the drone girl. So welcome, Sally French, to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a busy time for drone news. So I think having it distilled down to 5 minutes sounds great.
Yes.
I don't know if we could do it.
Well, and we're adding so much more drone content to this, what we did there. But you know what? It picks you up all the time. Our team watches you, by the way. You can go to thedronegirl.com and you can follow Sally, and you got a YouTube channel. And, you know, the coverage that you do is fantastic. And you've been doing this, what, since 2013?
2013, it's been a wild ride. That was the time when Jeff Bezos got on 60 Minutes and promised us that we would all have our Amazon packages being delivered to us via drone. As you and I know, that is not quite as commonplace as he promised. The drone delivery is still very much in a controlled mode. If you have drone delivery, you're very lucky, but most people do not have it, as Jeff Bezos seemed to indicate we would. But nonetheless, it has been a wild ride in the drone industry, and there's been so much development that we never thought of in 2013, so it's exciting to be a part of it.
Well, yeah, and you've seen this entire thing evolve from what ideas about drone delivery to hobbyists to using it from photography now to advanced commercial applications and agricultural spaying, and then even in combat and what we've all know about Ukraine, and then there's so much coming next, and then, you know, we all know about the FCC ban and the NDAA and Part 108 with BV loss coming, and there's so much where we've gotten to today. Right. And, you know, we're about to have somebody on who's running Project Ultra up in North Dakota. And their whole thing is 100 miles and 100 pounds and be able to do this accurately and repeatedly. Right. Mm-hmm. And drones are going to start doing missions that we hadn't thought of drones could do. 100 miles, 100 pounds. Think about that. But so we're going to talk about today about some of these shifts in the narratives that are happening, where the market's at right now. But what I'd really like to start out, because I think this is well, you know what? Let me read your bio first, because some people might not know you. I tried to memorize this, but okay. Okay, you're the founder and lead writer of thedronegirl.com. Of course, you're the lead writer because you founded it. So one of the earliest media platforms on drone news, reviews, tutorials, and industry insights. You started in 2013. Now you're quoted all over the place. That's how we found you, from New York Times, Consumer Reports, Wall Street Journal, CNN, and on and on. You were just on a panel, what, with Aviation Week, I believe. So, I mean, you're doing some great stuff now. You speak at South by Southwest, Harvard Business School on robotics programming. So beside journalism roots, you build communities, elevate underrepresented voice in the drone industry, and all while tracking the latest trends in drone delivery, regulation, and innovation. How's that?
That's exactly right. Where'd that come from?
Oh, I made it up.
I love it. That sounds great.
I'll, you know, I'll open for you at all your keynote speeches.
Beautiful. Hiring a publicist.
So I can even do gooder. Hey, let me do this. Before I get into what, you know, what's happening right now with this FCC and how it's impacting hobbyists and business and governments and the military. When you were 2013, you were just talking about, Bezos was talking about maybe drone delivery. From 2013 till now, I don't think anybody ever saw where drones were coming. I mean, I was a former Navy officer and was on aircraft carriers. And I just saw an article about the concern about drone swarms coming from Iran, because that carrier battle group was never designed to defend against 100 little teeny things with 5-pound warheads. That would take out an entire carrier air wing worth of aircraft on a flight deck. So these are threats that we've never even considered. That's how much things have changed. So I'd love to hear just your perspective as not only an observer, but an insider over the last 10 years. And just let us know what you're kind of seeing over the horizon.
Yeah, it's interesting to see how the trends change, the interest levels change. So in 2013, drones were a new thing. And when I started flying in 2013, it was home-built drones. They were not easy to fly. Now the drones that you fly are incredibly easy to fly. They basically fly themselves. So back in the day, it took a lot of coordination, a lot of muscle memory to know how to do it. And then we also had a lot of the public who was afraid of drones. They said, is that thing spying on me? Even if you would just go to a park, people would come ask you questions, wonder what you were doing. And part of it was just, it was foreign and novel. People weren't necessarily scared, but people really had no idea what it was. The way now, I think we all go to the beach at sunset and someone's buzzing their drone around and you kind of are like, all right, this person is interrupting my romantic walk on the beach. But that's kind of where we are with the consumer drones. And there was this wave, especially in 2015, 2016, where I mentioned drones used to be difficult to fly. And then drones started to become easy to fly. They had altitude hold. They had features like return to home. And that made it so, I joke, anyone's grandma could fly a drone. And what happened is the consumer market exploded because everybody's grandma could fly a drone and grandma wanted a drone to photograph her family reunion and get that epic selfie shot. So we saw this huge explosion in consumer drones, 2016, 2017 even. And then what happened is we really saw the industry take off in all sorts of use cases. You see the light show drone industry take off. You see Cirque du Soleil using them. And then, of course, you see the commercial applications. And some of them are really simple. They're a real estate photographer getting that aerial shot of the home. And that's something that, honestly, a 12-year-old could probably take that and sell their photo to the real estate photographer. And then you saw more advanced applications of things like mapping, where people are putting on different sensors on the drone besides just a camera, something like maybe a thermal sensor, maybe an NDVI sensor to understand what their farmland looks like, and really using drones for these amazing applications. Then we saw kind of a drop-off of consumer drones because everybody who wanted a drone had one. People sort of realized the drone flying over the beach sunset is maybe a little bit annoying. But instead, we had the Ukraine war changed everything in the consumer drone space. What we saw is the Ukraine war not using these $200,000 drones that even the U.S. military was using, but they are using DJI drones, a drone that you can buy at Best Buy for $500. They're using that in the DJI war, in the Ukraine war. And as you mentioned, it's compelling, it's concerning. The ways that people are using these drones for these applications. Of course, I'm the drone girl. I'm really excited about drone technology. It's not necessarily always a bad thing or a scary thing. And you mentioned swarm drones. Maybe on the negative side, we do see military applications that could be concerning to some people, but you also see swarm drones that are doing the drone light shows, and the drone light shows get bigger and bigger and bigger. Thousands of drones fly in coordination, and you think about the positive aspects of those things in terms of the environment, not blasting off fireworks into the air, but instead using drones that are reusable, that don't blast pyro into the air. So it's just been a wild ride in the drone industry. And it all comes down to this moment in which we connected. And it was when the FCC said they want to ban drones that are made outside of the U.S.
Well, and that's why when I reached out to you, I read your article. But will you also talk about the shift? I think because of drones, in that approach to both regulations around drones and also airspace, because integrating our traditional airspace into, think about it. Any given day, there's 10,000 aircraft with very trained crew in a very established air traffic control system. Mm-hmm. But now we're also talking about going into that some part of that airspace, hundreds of thousands, tens of thousands, if not millions, globally, of other flying, unmanned, sometimes autonomous or controlled airplanes, aircraft. So what have you seen there? Because there's been some big, I think, some big watershed moments, I think, and even how Washington's seeing it.
Yes. And if you go back to what we talked about of the Jeff Bezos vision of delivery drones flying everywhere, if we are going to have drones flying everywhere, there does need to be coordination around where drones are flying. I live in San Francisco, and I don't know if you've seen those DoorDash drivers on their scooters, but they are wild bringing people's deliveries, and they drive so fast and they go on the sidewalks and they're just zooming. And you figure, what if we replace those with drones? It would be the same thing. These drones would be zooming everywhere. My neighbors get so much DoorDash that if drones are doing the DoorDash deliveries, we need to have a system of enabling the drones to talk to each other, to know where they're going so they don't crash into each other in the airspace, or not just each other, but into manned aircraft or other objects in the airspace. So what the state of drone regulations has largely been, has been that drones must remain in your line of sight. Meaning if you're flying a drone, you have to be able to see it at all times. Even if the drone flies behind a tree or behind a building, technically that is illegal. Unless you basically get a waiver, so you are exempt from those rules. But those waivers are offered on very much a one-off basis. So there are companies like Wing, which is affiliated with Google, and they're doing drone deliveries largely in Texas, and they have waivers that allow drones to fly beyond line of sight. That is, of course, critical, because a delivery, as far as I can see, is not, but I could just walk it. I don't need a drone delivery to do that. But for drone delivery to be meaningful, it needs to go meaningful distances, which is farther than the eye can see. A lot of reasons why people say the Amazon vision of drone delivery didn't take off the way it was promised is because those regulations have held us back. To have to get a one-off waiver for all of these delivery operations is obviously not scalable. But what's coming most likely this year are rules that spell out how we can fly drones beyond visual line of sight, enable drones to talk to each other, so that way we do have that safety component and so that it really can be scalable.
Well, yeah, and we've interviewed companies like Anra and Speedbird. I don't know if you're familiar with Speedbird. And, the BVLOS rules are very different, like Brazil, Israel, where they're using drones for medical deliveries, Scotland for the mail. What do you think passing 108 is going to do here in the U.S.?
Yes, I do think that will be a huge moment in opening not just drone delivery applications, but also enabling so many other industries to grow. We think about the industries that are doing inspections of things like pipelines, of other things offshore, where it's really critical. And then even applications like farming, where they have massive amounts of farmland, that I do think we will see the commercial drone sector grow. And what's interesting, as I mentioned, 2016, 2017, everyone wanted to get a consumer drone, and that business has fallen off because I think there was just a hype wave. People realized they weren't interested, and we see all sorts of trends come and go. But the commercial applications for drones, that's a segment that is growing and will continue to grow once we have those Part 108 regulations.
I agree, and I want to talk some more about that. And that said, though, the NDA, the National Defense Authorization Act, started things, and then the FCC came out with, some people are calling it a ban. Your articles, it's not a ban, but it's about certain Chinese technology to be licensed. Can you actually just cut through and share with everybody what is the truth of what those regulations do and don't do, and then we'll talk about the impact?
Yes, because there is a lot of misinformation going on about what's banned, what you can and can't legally fly. And I have so many people who talk to me who are adamant that drones are banned, and I do have to correct them. So I'm so glad you are giving me this microphone that I can share with you what's going on. So the nutshell is that future drones that do not have FCC approval, these are drones that are not built yet. These drones are banned from coming into the U.S. if they are made outside of the U.S. So that does mean that existing drones that have already been approved can continue to be sold. So these
are models manufactured and be restocked at a wholesaler or retailer. Yep.
It's not whatever's left on the Target shelves. Buy it now because it'll never be restocked. They can continue to restock these models that have been approved. So you think about something like the DJI Neo 2. You can continue to buy a DJI Neo 2 for as long as DJI will sell it to you. The question is, when DJI makes their DJI Neo 3, which has not yet been maybe even invented yet, DJI cannot legally sell that in the U.S., at least under the current regulations. So there is no reason to go panic buy the drones that are already for sale. I, you know, always buy more drones, but no reason to panic buy because DJI will continue manufacturing their existing fleet, and you can continue to buy those for as long as DJI is willing to sell them, which I imagine would be indefinitely. But where this rule gets really interesting is when we think about applications where people are using these Chinese-made drones for things like drone light shows or for filming Hollywood movies. Most of these drones come from companies that are made outside of the U.S. What's going to happen is we're going to see the Hollywood industry leave to go to other countries because they're going to say, we need to do this drone shot. And the drone that we want to use is one that is more advanced. And this is going to be many years down the road. But maybe many years down the road, the future DJI Mavic 5 has a longer flight time or a better camera, or it can shoot in 16K, and we will not be able to fly that drone in the U.S. So the Hollywood film industry is going to say, we're going to shoot our film in a different country. Same as with these drone light shows, is they might just not have great light shows in the U.S. We have our existing set of light show drones, which are good, but maybe the future line of light show drones can fly longer, so they'll have longer shows in other countries, even safer shows in other countries, because the transmission is more powerful with a future model, meaning that all these other countries are going to very quickly become ahead of us once we can no longer import future drones into the U.S. Now, I mentioned there are exemptions, and we have already seen some exemptions come out. The U.S. came out with some exemptions for blue UAS drones, yep, which are the criteria of drones that have already been approved. So I think we're going to see more opportunities. They've even said that you can apply for a specific waiver if you're not blue UAS approved. You can just self-apply to get approved. And of course, the companies that have the most money, the best lawyers, are going to get those approvals.
Now, does this practically have an impact on the commercial business? You talked about mapping, surveying, agricultural, spraying. There's so many, some really neat, you know, use cases there. What's the practical?
Yes. I mean, what's really interesting is that DJI has evolved from not just being a consumer drone company, but from being a company that really serves a lot of these enterprise use cases. So farming, a lot of these farmers are using DJI drones. I live in San Francisco, and our police department uses DJI drones, and it's been a wonderful use case in our police department. We no longer do car chases, which are dangerous for the cops involved, for pedestrians on the street who might get hit. Now a drone can do that chase.
So what do they do? If a chase is developing, the cop has a drone in the car and he launches it?
Exactly.
And then they can flies keep it eyes versus chasing somebody.
Yeah, and it's a much safer way to keep eyes on the car wherever it's going. We can still track you with the drone.
Like a helicopter would, but it's instant.
Exactly. And so we see really good use cases of drones, but the thing is, the San Francisco Police Department does not have unlimited money, and I hope that they don't because they're funded by my tax dollars. So I want to make sure that they're using the best product at the lowest cost as a taxpayer myself. And then, of course, you look at something like farming. I want to have the cheapest possible produce that I can buy. And if they're having to buy drones that are more expensive because those drones are made in the U.S., there is definitely a concern that consumers will see the price impact in the taxes they're paying or the food prices that they're paying.
Yeah. And what's the impact on, you know, like states, Florida and other states? You're no longer able to buy those, even if they are, you know, available to commercially. Department of War is not buying them. So how does that? It seems to me though that what that's creating is capital and intellect pouring into innovation here in the U.S. Because what I've heard some people on the inside, and I'd love your opinion, that if you actually look at DJI, just the fidelity of their flight controllability, especially in a busy environment, like from a radio, I'm thinking RF environment in a city, right? The command control has incredible fidelity that we haven't matched. I've heard they're 5 or 10 years ahead of us as far as just the software. What's your opinion on that?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of these foreign drone companies are far more advanced than the U.S., and it comes largely down to their manufacturing capabilities. The U.S. just doesn't have a very strong manufacturing sector when it comes to these tech products. So I do think the hope is that this will allow the U.S. to have a stronger manufacturing sector in terms of tech products, because there is going to be no more competition from these foreign drone companies. The question is whether that will really work.
I think skipping now into maybe some of the segments we talked about, like we have hardware, software, we have control systems. Like I know one of the things talking with both, you know, Speedbird, right? They had to create a command center to control all these drones doing food delivery. And helping, you know, food poverty, food scarcity, you know, outside of Sao Paulo. So you have command control, you have the software on the drone, the interoperability and the hardware. Which of those areas do you think is going to create the breakthrough that makes the other ones, I guess, easier?
Yeah, well, it will be definitely interesting to see what the U.S. does in terms of hardware, because we already have a very strong software sector, but it's the hardware coming from other countries that is banned from coming in. And so it will definitely be an opportunity for the U.S. to scale up battery production, to scale up, you know, all of these different parts, the boards that go into the drones, the sensors. And we do have some companies within the U.S. that are doing that. So FLIR is based in Oregon, Teledyne FLIR, and they build really smart sensors. They are the best in the business, I'm willing to say, for things like thermal cameras. And I think there will be an opportunity for these companies to scale up. We even see Ambarella, and they are often the sensor company of choice. You look at a drone like the Anti-Gravity, which is a Chinese-made drone, but they actually use Ambarella parts in their drone, and Ambarella is an American company. So there definitely is more opportunity for growth there.
So you're talking about growth. If we're looking at, I guess, non-Chinese or, you know, things that could be sold, you know, here, where do you think the real growth is going to come from, and where's some of the hype? What are you seeing?
Yes, I mean, where there is real growth, it will be interesting. A lot of people right after this FCC ban came out and said, what drone company should I invest in? And one, I wish I knew the future. I wish I knew the answer, because then I could quit Drone Girl and be rich. So I will say I don't know the answer to this. But one of the things that we continuously see is the reliable source of revenue in the drone industry is drones as a service. Even though drones do fly themselves and the drones are the robot, that does not mean that they are displacing jobs. And there are so many job opportunities within the drones as a service sector. Assuming that we still can import and use good drones, there are many opportunities for people to power drones, again, in all these fields we mentioned, things like agriculture and inspections. But even in some of these really wild use cases that you might never think of, I heard of a company that uses drones to spread ashes as like a memorial service when someone dies. And there are many opportunities like that where it does seem like there is no ceiling there, the way there is a ceiling to software, because by and large, our software is quite good. And even I would say our hardware is quite good. I don't want to stop and put a cap on what hardware should be, but flight times are rarely limiting for many of these use cases. camera tech is so advanced now. The flight tech is really advanced. The safety, the return to home, the obstacle avoidance. The tweaks that we see in the hardware are usually quite minimal when companies launch new drones. So I would say the bigger opportunity is kind of this infinite ceiling of service opportunities.
Yeah, and will you define what drone as a service is and give us a couple other examples?
Yeah, so drone as a service is you offering your drone for literally any sort of service. And so this is a really great opportunity, especially for small businesses to offer up their services. To launch a hardware product is obviously so much work that goes into the factoring and the design and all that. Same as even software, it does require maybe a more robust operation. Then drones as a service could be as simple as a 14-year-old who decides, maybe not 14 because you need to be 16 to get your Part 107. So we'll say 16, is a 16-year-old who is taking real estate photos of the local homes for sale and selling them. That's at the most basic level. But then what we see is an enormous opportunity for not just flying the drones, but being able to analyze the data. That's almost the biggest problem in the drone industry right now is, like I said, any 14-year-old could fly a drone, and they could fly a drone with a thermal camera on it, and I would trust a 14-year-old over myself because they probably have better video game skills than I do. I would trust them to fly a drone with a thermal camera, and they have all the time in the world that they can fly any flight all the time. The problem is you have so much data, and what do you do with that data? It's not helpful to have a thermal image of a house. What's helpful is having the skills to say, oh, the way your roof is and this discoloration from the thermal camera indicates to me what type of repair we have to do. And so that's where it really takes the skill. And what we will see is people who are not just drone pilots, but who have secondary skills who can bring that in. So being an expert in mapping, being an expert in NDVI, being able to understand how photogrammetry or orthomosaics work, and take all that drone data and then give the client actually valuable information. And a bunch of aerial photos is often not actually valuable.
No, and it could be a lot more than one. Let's just say it's in Bismarck, North Dakota, and I want you to map my 10,000-acre farm, and all that data goes up, and you say, hey, you need fertilizer here, you need water here.
Right.
And then you know what else, though, is I'm having better computing power and massive data sets, mm-hmm. and I'm looking at the data from all these farms. Now I can actually have this data product as a service also back. So I think drones as a service is something that I think it can power entrepreneurs and some really creative solutions, I think, to probably things we haven't even seen yet.
Mm-hmm. And the reality is the farmer doesn't want to know how to fly a drone or how to do anything with that. The farmer's kid does, but the farmer doesn't. Right. And they want someone else to take the photos and analyze it and tell them what they need to do in terms of fertilizing or spraying. They don't want to deal with the drone.
So question for you. You know, one of the things I've noticed, what I like about you is, A, your energy and how you communicate and storytelling.
Thank you.
And you find interesting areas, I believe, to report on that are very relevant. So I'm just curious. So when you're out looking at what's happening, you wake up in the morning, right? You're looking at a story. Maybe it's data. Maybe some kind of transparency or lack of transparency or an innovation. What is it about a story that makes you lean in and get really curious?
I mean, people are at the heart of the drone industry, and any story that has a human component and a what does it mean for me component is really the story that I want to tell. And I got to tell you, I get so many bad pitches. I don't know if you get a lot of bad pitches, but I have people who just say, I want you to cover my new battery that we just launched. And then they'll throw a whole bunch of tech specs at me. And I'm just like, okay. So what? And I love a story that has a so what component. And why does it really matter? How is it moving the needle? And I think that's why this FCC drone ban has really struck a chord with people, is because it really does affect all of us. And people want to know what's next for their existing fleet of drones, what's next for their businesses, what's next for their future drones, can they buy them? And there really is a human component to these stories.
No, there really is. Thanks for sharing that. And, you know, if I talking about the FCC ban, I'm just thinking about, are there anything that you're looking at from, let's say, a regulatory area or even a public perception of drones? You know, you talked about, we thought at first they were spying. Are there some things that we got to be very careful we don't get wrong as an industry that would slow down adoption?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I think it's important. Obviously, the FCC ban is driven by a lot of political concerns, a lot of anti-China sentiment. And definitely there is validity there to some extent. And the U.S. does need to be better about building up its own industry. But it's important that we don't overlook and ban other companies that are doing really good things. And one of the first things that happened with the FCC ban is you look at companies based in Europe, like Auterion or Parrot, which makes a U.S. edition of their drone, and Parrot's a French company. And a lot of people said, what's going to happen to these countries and their companies? And of course, they were some of the companies that did end up getting an exemption. But it is really important that we are cognizant of not doing blanket bans and shooting ourselves in the foot later, especially when it comes to the number of parts that are considered by American. So under this rule, the drone would have to be 65% American made in terms of price. So not in terms of physical volume of the drone parts, but just in terms of the price. And I would really caution people to watch out for American companies massively inflating the price of certain components to make the drone 65% in terms of price, because we're always going to use screws from Mexico or propellers from Vietnam. And that definitely makes sense. I don't think there is any security concerns of using those. And we don't necessarily want to be manufacturing screws in the U.S. anyway. But it is really critical that if those prices creep up, we don't just in turn see American companies inflating the prices of their boards.
Well, you know, you talked about hardware there. What about the software side? What about the software is made outside the U.S.?
Yeah, so that will be interesting. I will say that most of the software is actually made in the U.S. We have Silicon Valley right here where I live. So I do think that is less of a concern.
Okay. Now let me ask you this. Women in aviation. We've had some people on to talk about, you know, how do we get more women in here? I volunteer at Young Eagles and we're constantly, you know, we fly, you know, young boys and girls for their first flight ever and get them involved in aviation and flying planes. And we have to recruit to get, you know, more, you know, as many women as the, you know, young men that show up. But I know it's a passion of yours. So what is your thought out there for people listening just to get, you know, more people involved and more women?
Yes. I mean, I'm so glad that you have me on the show because it's really important that people just see someone like them in the industry. And you see this not just in drones. Separately, I compete as a power lifter and it's the same energy. I go into
the gym. Come on now.
And yeah, and I'm the one woman in the gym and there's 20 guys. And it can be hard to go into a place where nobody's like you. And it doesn't need to necessarily even be gender. It could be hard to go into a place where everyone's a different age. And I'm at the point where I realize I'm no longer in my 20s. And now I'm in a room with a bunch of 20-year-olds. And I'm like, oh no, I don't fit in here. I need to go. And, you know, very much the same energy. So it's important that we have a diverse amount of faces in there. So when you do go into a room, you can see people like you. I am really encouraged with how much the drone industry has grown because it is not just the stereotypically male things. It's not just drones on construction sites or something like that. It's not just drones into police departments. I think about, I actually got married recently and we had a light show. Thank you. We had a light show at our wedding, a drone show at our wedding. And it got me thinking of, it was very complicated to put on the drone show. And luckily I know my stuff and I know what all the waivers that are needed are. But I thought, wow, if wedding planners carved out a niche in drone shows, there is opportunity there. And of course, most wedding planners are women. So what better way to get women in the drone industry than these wedding drone light shows? So I'm very optimistic that there are tons of growth opportunities, especially as we see more applications of drones.
So any wedding planners out there, Sally is available for mentorship. Just, you know, she just volunteered.
Exactly. I would be so happy to. Also, I'm serious.
I know you would. Okay, as we wrap up, let me ask this. So I want you to put on, put your mentorship back on, hat, right? And if you were talking to, let's say, either, you know, large companies in the space or media, how it's covering the space, or even government, mm-hmm. what are some things around that they could do to help the story better that would accelerate both, I think, adoption and innovation?
Mm-hmm.
Like what advice? Boom.
The challenge is getting the news out in as short as possible, but still getting it right, especially with the FCC news. I saw a lot of headlines that were FCC bans DJI drones. And in some ways—
And that's not accurate. And a lot of people responded to that.
Yes, thank you for the clarification. Yes, but then you watch maybe the whole video on TikTok and— TikTok has a character count, and so that's as much as they can fit in the headline. And then TikTok favors you having a very catchy intro, so people say that in the intro. And then everyone has ADHD brains on TikTok that they only watch the first 10 seconds where it says FCC banned CGI drones. And they fail to watch the end where we explain, oh, well, it's future drones that haven't actually been approved yet, and this could all change. And people get these news snippets that are 10 seconds and they don't get the whole story. So rather than tell people, you listen to the full story, because that's a harder challenge to do, I would encourage media and also the government, when they're promoting these, to find a way to get it right in those few words right up front.
Awesome. And I agree with you. And even some of the more mainstream, you know, aviation media outlets did not get it right at first. I was actually talking to the CEO at Drone Nerds, Jeremy. Their phones were, you know, they have a large amount of commercial customers. People were freaking out.
Yep.
And he had to like hold like a town hall to say, hey guys, here's the truth. You're okay.
Yes.
Like take a breath. Like we got you. We're doing all the research. We can answer all your questions, and you know, you're not going to lose access to anything. So, but with that, as we kind of put the drone back in the box, so to speak, what final thoughts would you like to say? Like, you know, we're in 26, the beginning of 26. What do you think, if you and I, let's say we're talking next year, what do you think we'd be looking back the most excited to be like, okay, this was the thing last year?
Yeah, I mean, I think the real game changer is going to be these Part 108 BV loss rules. And I think
Let's assume it passes this year, because I'm fingers crossed.
Yeah, fingers crossed. And fingers crossed that it passes in a way with logic and reason, also minimal red tape, because the whole challenge so far in the drone industry has been lots of, we can't do this, and the only way we can do this is getting around it with a waiver. So the more that we can do to enable rather than block, that's going to be key.
Okay. Love it. Well, Sally, keep knocking them alive out there. I so appreciate your time.
And Thank you. This is fun.
And I'd love to have you come back on as a regular guest and like go maybe deep into some topics.
Let's do it.
Okay.
I'm down.
You got a deal. Have a great one.
You too.